Hello, welcome to the True Faith Podcast. You've got myself, Alex Hurst, Simon Campbell, and a very special guest tonight. I'm pretty sure all of you will know who he is through his various exploits as a Newcastle United fan, amongst other things, Mr. Steve Wraith. Steve, thanks very much for joining us, and I suppose we'll jump straight in and get your thoughts on some pretty major developments over the past few days in terms of the fan base and, some would argue, finally a reaction to the way Mike Ashley runs the football club.
Yeah, I think, you know, if Rafa goes, we go movement, which I suppose we've got to call it now, because it's built up quite a following over the course of the last 48 hours. Is not surprising, because obviously the feeling is very raw amongst Newcastle fans at the moment. We had all the hope, I suppose, at the back end of last year that there was going to be a takeover. Mike Ashley had put the club up for sale, made a very public statement on a recorded programme on Sky Sports, saying that he wanted to put the club up for sale and, you know, that he would listen to any bids. We had a bidder. We had somebody who was interested. We had somebody who'd gone through the process of due diligence. And then ultimately, we had a major fallout between the two parties when, you know, the PR spin from both sides, it has to be said, got out of control, and we ended up with not a stalemate. We ended up with, you know, the owner basically saying what he wanted to say in the press about the way that he felt business had been handled. And essentially what it looked like to me as a fan was that, you know, the one suitor that we had been humiliated in public and basically was never going to come back. So that hope was dashed amongst the support that the club was going to be sold, and there's been nobody else forthcoming. So the inevitable was going to happen, which was that Rafa Benitez contract situation was going to develop, and towards the back end of last season, with the place in the Premier League being secured, you know, efforts were made by Newcastle United's man in charge, if you like, man at the front, Lee Charnley, with his able sidekick Keith Bishop, to try and get Rafa to sign a contract, and that obviously didn't work. You know, there was no contract signing forthcoming, and that obviously is something which, you know, they were charged with and they failed at. So Mike Ashley was then left with, you know, a rather uncomfortable situation. Rafa with a contract ebbing away with, you know, 12 months to go, and, you know, Newcastle secure in the Premiership, which we're all delighted about, but with the obvious question of whether there was going to be any transfer funds made available. And the answer to that question is quite obvious now. You know, the club is still up for sale, and he hopes he can still sell the club, you would imagine. And that means that he's not willing to spend money on players. But he's also in a position where, once again, he's put out a public statement to say that he would back the manager with any funds that he made. And we're now in a position where Rafa has made funds, or we're led to believe he's made funds. I mean, we've secured our place in the Premier League. The TV money, as we all know, is vast. He has wheeled and dealed fantastically well in this, you know, under this regime, to the point where he's making a profit on each transfer window, because he's not allowed to spend money. So even the dumbest mathematician would say that there is money there to spend, yet he's not been allowed to spend it. The question is why? And that is, you know, to me, it is because Mike Ashley still wants to sell the club. And if that's the case, then he doesn't want to spend money, because why would you want to spend money if you're going to sell the club? It's not going to be your club. It's not going to be your players. He still feels that Newcastle United is an attractive option at the price that he wants. And the fact that he's upset that one buyer, because there doesn't seem to be anybody else out there, puts us in a tricky situation. So I've gone all around the houses to say that, you know, now we're in this position where the countdown clock has really started on Rafa's contract, and the transfer window, you know, with less than 3 weeks remaining, and all we're doing is selling players and getting rid of players who are high earners, and we're bringing in loan deals, and the fans are obviously not happy about it. And we've all been there, we've all done it, we've all protested against this regime. I've protested against numerous regimes in my own ways and forms, You know, going back to my very first chairman, you know, which was Gordon McKeague and Stan Seymour, that, you know, that kind of board, I stood outside the ground in the 80s and you know, was part of United Supporters for Change. You know, then you fast forward to John Hall and Freddie Shepherd and, you know, all of that, you know, regime. George Forbes, you know, one who I'd forgotten there, but another one, you know, being there, done and got the T-shirt, but it's a constant in your life as a Newcastle fan that you're never happy with what's going on as at the owners. And but this man has really pushed the boundaries and he's upset the masses. And it's no wonder that we have a new movement, another movement who wants to get something done. And do I agree with it? Yes, I do, because I'm a Newcastle fan who wants to see change. Do I think it could have been better organised and better prepared? Yes, I do, because I think, you know, the benchmark in recent years has been the Pardew Out campaign. I didn't support it at the time and wasn't, you know, wasn't against it, but at the same time, I didn't feel it was right at the time to voice, you know, voice my opinion about that. But Pardew Out was well organised. It was, you know, everything that they did was well thought out in advance. And I think they could probably learn a lot from that. But listen, it's Newcastle United supporters who want to make a difference. They can see that there's an issue with Mike Ashley, the owner. They can see there's a problem in the fact that Rafa Benitez's contract is ebbing away and we've got a really good manager there who we don't want to lose. So they've done what any supporter can do. They've stood up and they've said, let's do something about this. And at the moment, they've got the momentum, but they need to talk to other fans' organisations, which I know they've done. I know they've already contacted various people who are in, I don't like to say positions of power, but positions of influence who are part of different fans' organisations. And hopefully those meetings go well and they can learn something from that. But yeah, it's an organisation which, you know, is growing, you know, week by week. And, you know, let's see where it goes to.
Steve, interesting that you said that you believe that Mike Ashley still believes the club is a saleable asset at the price he's talked about. There is a thought process which people say that the club has never been up for sale. He doesn't want to sell it. He's making too much money from the exposure of his sports brand around the world. And despite Sports Direct's recent losses, which I think people have read a little bit too much into, with it being, not that I'm an expert, mostly Debenhams based in terms of Sports Direct, still being a very profitable business for him. I think one of the things which was in the Business Insider review of the accounts was increased turnover from worldwide sales for Sports Direct, which can't be anything but linked to Newcastle United. Do you think he's a willing seller? Because the things you just said there seem to suggest to me you think he's very much motivated to sell the club.
In the past, I don't think he ever intended on selling the club because he was on too much of a good thing. And, you know, we have to bear in mind, you know, the one interview he did for a club publication. I've still got it, you know, at home. The now defunct United magazine, where he did a 10-page interview talking about what his hopes and dreams are with Newcastle United. But I always point out that one paragraph in there where he said, I've bought Newcastle United to promote my sports brand globally. So anybody who ever says that Mike Ashley, you know, has bought this club and he's changed his tune and this was all he ever bought it for, well, yeah, you're right. That is all he ever bought it for, to make Sports Direct a national, and not just a national, but an international company, you know, and he's done that. And you take your hat off to him. Myself, as a businessman, you know, fair play to him. He's done that. However, he's running a football club the way that he runs other businesses, and that is what has irked and you know, riled Newcastle United supporters, because it's not the way you would genuinely run a football club, and it's annoyed people and upset people. He's put the wrong people in charge. He's put people in charge, you know, who aren't football people. And, you know, we don't expect anything else from somebody like Mike Ashley, because, you know, he's like every big businessman who reaches that level. He's done it his way and he won't change. And I do believe he is wanting to sell this time, because he went on to Sky and he did the interview with David Craig, and, you know, it was very much a difference in tact and a different way of doing it, you know. And I genuinely don't believe he thought there was anybody out there who would come forward and want to buy it, especially not at the price, you know, that he put it up at. But I think, you know, I think once Amanda Stabley came in with PCP, you know, nobody really knows who her investors are. Nobody knows who the people are behind Amanda's bid for Newcastle United. But I think the fact that they came in and the price didn't put them off, gave Mike Ashley the confidence to continue with the sale. You know, maybe initially he was thinking, well, you know, I'll dip my toe in the water. But I think once he had Stavely on the hook, I think he thought that this is something which really could generate me some big income, and I can look at my other industries. It's difficult because, you know, genuinely none of us know. Yes, you know, I met Amanda Stavely and I met her husband, and I met the team behind her. As did George Culkin. You know, we met around about the same time. And I think that gives me a little bit more knowledge on what they and what their motivations were. Was it genuine? Yes, it was genuine. You know, was there ever an intention to buy Newcastle United? Yes, there was. But I think what we always need to remember is that it was never Amanda's money. It's never a husband's money. Yeah, they may well have put a little bit in, but from my perspective and George's perspective, because he covered it well in his newspaper article subsequently, you know, business was there to be done. But whenever there's a genuine takeover, we never ever see it played out in the public. And I think the biggest thing that everybody learned from that, and I'm talking about both sides here, was that, you know, PR agencies that were employed on both sides, you know, got carried away with themselves, and it made it very much a public spat. And I think both sides needed to go away, lick their wounds, and decide what they were going to do. Where does that put us now? I do believe Mike Ashley still wants to sell the club. I do believe Amanda Stavely and her investors want to buy a football club. Will they buy Newcastle United? That's the million-dollar question, because time has passed since that public spat, and are other clubs available? You know, it's easy to look about and say, well, X, Y, and Z, yep, they're available at this moment in time. But is there another club that's out there which is potentially, you know, something that they would want to buy? A club doesn't have to be up for sale for an investor to go to them and say, look, we're interested in buying your football club. If we made you an offer, would you sell it? So there is that possibility that, you know, Amanda Stavely and her investors are looking at another football club. And if they are, that puts Newcastle second, third, fourth in line, wherever we feel. And that might change the whole tact again, you know. If Mike Ashley feels that Newcastle United aren't first choice for Amanda Stavely and PCP anymore, does he lower the price? Is he holding on and thinking, well, I could get through to January without spending any money, and Rafa keeps us in a certain league position, and I get a bit more of this TV money, which, as we know, is getting paid in instalments. Does he get the opportunity then to keep that money and still try and get what he wants? Or does he reduce the price slightly because he's running out of time, because he wants to sell it before the end of the season? There's a lot of question marks over it, you know, and the only people who really know the answers to these questions are Mike Ashley and Amanda Stavely, you know. And unfortunately, you know, it doesn't matter how much, you know, contact George has had and how much contact I had on that famous day in October now. But, you know, from our perspective, it's still very much between them. And, you know, do I think Amanda's gone away? No, I don't. Do I think Newcastle United is the first, you know, the first team that they're looking at? Who knows? You know, because, you know, as I say, there's a lot of water passed under the bridge now. And I'd like to think, and I would love to think, that Amanda Stavely and PCP would come back in, you know, and negotiate with Mike Ashley. But I still think, you know, I think with the clock ticking on Rafa's contract, the pressure is more on Ashley than it is on anybody else. And, you know, it's going to be an interesting couple of months, you know, once we see how the season starts, and then, you know, where Newcastle are, maybe come the next transfer window. But I certainly don't think that's dead in the water. But, you know, Ashley again will still be hoping that there's other suitors out there who will be interested in buying the football club. But the longer this mess drags on with Rafa, you know, it's certainly going to affect things.
It's interesting what you said about the way the takeover throughout last season got played out in the media. And I think when it started to get silly and shots were getting fired both ways, I think everyone started to think, oh, the wheels are coming off this, and is it really going to happen, if the way they're going on? And everyone came to the conclusion, well, this is how Mike Ashley conducts his business, that's what he does. I guess my question from that is that, are we now, or fans, starting to realise that we have to kind of play him at his own game? Is that what this kind of, if Rafa goes, we go movement, as you call it, is about? Do we need to start getting a bit dirty with him? Do we need to start kind of getting a bit of media presence? Because this is how he does business. Do we need to start, like, getting a message out there through the media? I mean, social media is a powerful tool, and it's very exclusive to the people who are on it. So there's lots of people who probably still don't even know anything about if Rafa goes, because, you know, if you're not on Twitter, you're not going to know what people are talking about. But at the same time, is that the channel that we as fans have got to go down, play him in his own game, get a bit dirty, make some news articles, start to hit him in a way that he behaves? Is that...
The only thing that Mike Ashley cares about really is his own businesses, and Sports Direct is his baby. You know, I've said this before. I said it at the talk that we did at the Irish Centre last year, that, you know, Sports Direct is the target for a lot of people's anger. And, you know, we've seen it in the past where, you know, people have mimicked it and had a go at it. But ultimately, everything that you do against Mike Ashley and Sports Direct, whether it's having a pop at him on social media or whether it's putting some banners up outside the ground, you know, and the ill-fated, you know, funeral march that was done, all of those kind of things, all it does is draw attention to Mike Ashley and Sports Direct. And I remember sitting back after you know, Mike Ashley out did the funeral, and of course I was asked to be the vicar on that particular day by the Mike Ashley out group. Not something I'm particularly proud of, but at the same time I did it because I believed in what I was doing at the time. And I actually got a message back from somebody at the club say, "Oh, Mike really enjoyed your protest," you know. And I thought, you know, that's not what you want to hear, because, you know, basically all it did was it prolonged it in the news. It got 2 or 3 days coverage. It obviously got me a lifetime of grief, you know, which I laugh at these days. And, you know, I'm very thick-skinned, but at the same time, all it did was promote Sports Direct as a brand. You know, we sitting around this table today are talking about Mike Ashley, but, you know, every other sentence probably we end up mentioning his sports brand, and it constantly promotes it, and that's what we do. So playing it in his own game, none of us can actually physically take on Mike Ashley with anything really, because of his financial status, you know. Unless we have 400 million, which, you know, we're ready to plonk down in front of him, take the football club over, none of us have ever got a chance of doing anything with him. You can embarrass maybe Mike, you can annoy him, you can do things against, you know, the brand, but, you know, in the grand scheme of things, it's probably like the wasp we've had flying around the table for the last 10 minutes. You know, it annoys you for about a minute, and then, you know, you move on to something else. You know, and I think really the thing that really knocked him, if anything, was when his business practices were getting hauled in front of, you know, the national media. That's something which, you know, you can probably, you know, look at. You know, we've got some fantastic MPs in the northeast. You know, Sheehan Woora and Ian Mearns, and you know, so on and so forth. And those people maybe, you know, tabling motions which question his business practices and target things like that, because they're Newcastle fans. You know, it doesn't mean that they're not allowed to do that. They can do it if they feel they genuinely have rights. And, you know, hopefully something like that will develop over the next couple of weeks, because I know they're as annoyed as the next person, and that is something positive that we can do. But things like this, do they annoy him? No, I don't really think they do. He doesn't come to the games anymore, home or away. You know, if he comes to the Tottenham game, it's because, you know, I think we all know he's got a soft spot for Tottenham Hotspur. If he goes to the odd game in London, maybe that's just to have a day out with friends. But we don't see him at the games anymore, because he's not in love with the game of football, and he's certainly not in love with Newcastle United. He probably regrets buying it, you know, now in a lot of ways, but he won't regret it because it's put his sports brand on the map, which is what he wanted in the first place. And I just think, you know, with, you know, the Rafa protest we've got at the moment, it's going to last as long as maybe, you know, the bad form lasts. If Newcastle get off to a bad start of the season, the fixture list hasn't been kind to us. You know, if we lose our first three games, you know, it's going to build momentum. You know, if we beat Tottenham in the first game of the season, where do they go? You know, how do they work? Because you're seeing stats at the moment, people going online and saying that we've got 5,000 season tickets left. You know, they haven't sold out. Price hikes have affected that, because, you know, we're still in a relatively, you know, poor area of the country. But, you know, if Newcastle go on a little run and, you know, they win the first couple of games, and we'll find ourselves in the top three or top four in the first couple of weeks of the season, those season tickets will get snapped up, and we'll be back to square one. We'll have 52,000 people in the ground, and it'll probably just lose momentum. But I think that it's just going to be interesting to see how it all develops with that. And, you know, as I say, it's got my back into a degree. You know, I love to see people other than myself and the usual suspects standing up and trying to be counted. And, you know, hopefully they can push on and if things, you know, hopefully things develop for the better and they don't have to push on. But if things, as we expect, take a turn for the worst, then, you know, this movement's going to grow and hopefully it has a desired effect. But will it affect Mike Ashley? Probably not.
So that was really interesting, Stephen. I think, like you say, you're probably one of the best placed people in terms of the sheer number of issues we've had with owners and your involvement from the early days, fanzine, stuff like that, all that you ran, and the different owners that you've named there. Before we move on to Rafa, if you could give advice to these people behind the new movement, and they do listen to the podcast, so, like, you know, they're listening now, what would you say to them? What would your advice be? I'm sure you would be the first to admit that it's not an exact science.
Yeah.
But in terms of Newcastle fans want to get rid of Mike Ashley, what's your advice?
I think for the new movement, it's simply, you know, you've got off to a good start, you need to build on it, but, you know, make sure that you've got an organising committee and you're talking to other people who've been there, done it, and got the T-shirt. You know, there's a wealth of talent and expertise who's been through this before. You know, I could rattle off names like Colin Whittle, obviously True Face Michael Martin, Steve Hasty, Bill Corcoran, Neil Mitchell. You know, from, you know, people who were involved with the trust in the early days, who then went on to form NUFC Fans United. You know, there's a lot of people out there who've got, you know, war medals, if you like, from this kind of like campaign. I just think it's just, you know, not being afraid to be wrong and holding your hands up and admitting you're wrong. But I just think that it just needs to be focused on, you know, working with other groups. You know, it took me a while to come round to supporting the trust. You know, I had my own issues early doors with the trust, but I think when I look at it now, it's the only viable option for me to move forward working with, you know, with Newcastle United. You know, because whether you agree with what they're doing or whether you disagree with what they're doing, the trust can be used in so many positive ways, you know, with the club. So I genuinely feel that, you know, they should look at contacting, you know, the trust and trying to work with them. You know, that there's a lot of good work can be done, and I think that that's what they need to look at.
So moving on to the man that everyone wants to talk about at the minute, and it is going to be an ongoing issue this season in every press conference, in every match report anyone writes, in every pre- and post-match conversation will be Rafa Benitez's contract. I know that you probably spoke to the man more than most than the rest of us. Have you got any insight from his people and the people you speak to about how, I mean, how is he feeling about this as a bloke, first and foremost, as a man who I presume is desperate to stay in Newcastle United and grow it from the ground up? From what you're told, how is Rafa handling this situation?
I've been in a privileged position, really, because when Rafa came to the club, he reached out to me via his advisors just to basically tie him up with people in the local community. So whether that was fans groups or whether it was charities, obviously Newcastle Legends, the company that I run, that's what we do. You know, we work on our own events, but we also try to help out, you know, football clubs or charities to try and raise money by supplying Newcastle Legends former players to their events. And I think, you know, it was word of mouth, really, from one or two other people who've been at the club in the past who, you know, reached out to Rafa and his advisors that, you know, I was maybe somebody they would want to speak to when they came to Newcastle. And that's it. It's as simple as that. That's how I found myself in a privileged position and in close proximity to Rafa, and nothing more sinister or suspicious than that. And it's been an enjoyable experience, because it's meant that I've been able to take people who've bid a lot of money on a Rafa experience, which has been a chance to take fans and supporters who've bid for a package at a charity event to a game. They've been able to go and have a corporate experience. They've been able to sit in the director's box, and then at the end of the game we've been able to take them down and see Rafa in the manager's office and have a chat with them. So, you know, it's been great, really, for me over the last couple of years to be able to do that. And I've got to know Rafa. I've got, you know, got to know him. I've got to the point where, you know, you go in and you sit and talk to him and he talks football. I know you guys had a similar experience when he went up to the training ground. He's welcoming, he's friendly, and there's nothing false about him, and automatically he just goes into football mode and he wants to know your opinion, and he's no different after a game. He'll come in after doing his interview on Sky Sports, which is, you know, and his commitments to Match of the Day, and then, you know, we're in the manager's office waiting for him, and he comes in and he's superb. He comes in and he greets everybody as if he's met them before. You know, he then wants to know what you thought about the game. Obviously he'll speak to his advisors, but then he speaks to you, you know. And very early doors I was quite reticent to say what I thought, but now I've just, you know, I've eased up and I'll say, well, I thought he had a good game, or, you know, why didn't you play him, or, you know, maybe he's a little joke, but he enjoys talking football, as does his coaching staff. You know, the coaching staff are all very, you know, very, you know, friendly and amicable, and also willing to talk football. So it's, you know, My experience at football as a manager was at Sunday league level, but, you know, I did 20 years of that, and I beg to differ anybody who thinks that, you know, doesn't matter what level you manage at, you can have a conversation about football, about whether you think your centre half played well or whether the centre forward wasn't getting any service. And I've just done that with Rafa, and it's been great to be able to liaise and speak to one of the best managers in the world like that. On his situation now and how things have developed, you know, it's not really a conversation I've had with him. I'm not that close to him. I don't have his phone number. I can't just pick the phone out to him. It's his advisors who I've become very friendly with. But, you know, obviously you pick things up and you see things, and, you know, he's a very proud man. He's somebody who is proud of his achievements with this football club. You can see that he's proud of his achievements with the limited budget that he's been allowed. And I think the most frustrating thing for me to be in his presence and listen to what he thinks about the club and what he thinks about the fans and his ideas for what he wants to do, to see that all being diminished, you know, week by week, month by month, and now year by year, by an owner who hasn't had the foresight to give him any investment is depressing for me, because I'm seeing it firsthand, and I'm seeing the way that he greets people from the charities greets people from different organisations, and I'm thinking, this guy is just like a PR dream, you know, for our football club. Not just a PR dream, but he's also, you know, he's just a fantastic football manager and somebody who we should be encouraging. And I think it's the most frustrating thing is that, you know, we sat back and watched somebody like Steve McClaren being given £80 million to spend in a transfer window, and they won't give Rafa £8 million. You know, it's just soul-destroying. But I do feel, you know, that, you know, the fact that Rafa's stayed, you know, a lot's been made of the fact of the, you know, the fact that he would have to pay to get out of his contract, and, you know, that's the case with most situations like this. If Rafa wanted to go tomorrow, you're not telling me that a football club like Liverpool, Man United, Chelsea, Arsenal, whoever it was, if they wanted Rafa Benitez, they wouldn't automatically pay the 5 or 6 million that Rafa has in his contract. I think that's pointless. I think the simple fact of the matter is that Rafa Benitez loves Newcastle United. He loves the supporters, and he sees it as a project, which is what he was talking about from day one. It's a project, and he sees that project, you know, not just as the football team and the first team, but he sees it as the academy. He sees it as a blank canvas which he can mould into the Rafa Benitez like way of doing things. And, you know, if he gets that opportunity, honestly, this club will fly. Like, it really will, with 52,000 supporters behind it just going to the games. But globally, the amount of supporters we know we've got, we could be as big as Manchester United, there's no doubt about it, globally. But that needs somebody with his knack in the manager's dugout, and it needs somebody, you know, somebody with a bit of foresight and a bit of ingenuity, but a little bit of bravery as well, to say, look, I'll back you, Rafa, because I believe you can do this. And, you know, that's what we need. Unfortunately, Mike Ashley's not the person who's willing to have that gamble. It's ironic, because he's a big gambler. He's just not willing to have that gamble. And if we have somebody in the boardroom who's willing to have that gamble, listen, we've got the man who will not be talking about Kevin Keegan as much as we have been for years. The entertainers, etc., were fantastic, but, you know, we'll talk about the generation that won that elusive trophy and continues to win trophies, but Rafa's got to be given a chance.
Okay, it's interesting what you said about 20 minutes ago about the clock is now ticking for Mike Ashley. It's the Rafa clock, and it does feel like that. It feels like we've got less than a year left of Rafa Benitez now, and my take on it has always been, let's just enjoy this while it lasts. And And even if Rafa gets no back in the season, based on his achievements last season, we could still somehow, you know, finish mid-table again and have a run in a cup. And that makes me positive enough to want to just see out the season. But in your opinion, is that it? Is it by the come July 2019, is it a case of either Ashley has to have sold the club or have had a massive change of heart and given him some money? Do you think that's where the story ends if neither of those things happen?
I really do. I think it's now a big game of cat and mouse. It's been a big game of cat and mouse for the last 12 months, but I do think now, I think that, yeah, it's decision time, you know, and it really just depends what Mike Ashley wants out of Newcastle United. You know, if he wants out, then the clock's ticking for Mike Ashley as opposed to ticking for Rafa Benitez. Rafa obviously believes that a takeover is still a possibility, and that is why he's sticking around. I think he genuinely must look at this football club, and he loves it that much to think, well, you know, let's do another 12 months. His head must be battered this summer, you know, because they're not going for plan A or plan B. They're going for plan C and plan D as far as transfers are concerned. But you have to take your hat off to the people who do the transfer business for Rafa, because when you look at what happened last year, you know, in the two windows, the business he did was tremendous considering how much money he was given. Yeah. You know, the players that he brought in, you know, to get promotion from the Championship were essentially used, you know, last season to keep us in the Premier League. We haven't got that excuse this season because those players are now Premier League players. You know, anyone who says it's a Championship squad in the Premiership, you know, it's not true. These now are considered as Premier League players because we finished 10th, albeit on goal difference, but we finished 10th in the Premier League. The business that's done this summer is going to be vital. You know, are we going to get the same luck with injuries? Who knows? Suspensions, you know, we didn't end up with the envisaged suspensions. You know, a lot of people question mark over Shelby's temperament. Apart from that, you know, unfortunate sending off against Spurs, when we all know that, you know, it should have been Harry Kane walking down the tunnel. You know, Shelby did very, very well last season. You know, we did have a fair run of luck last season, and you don't get that every year. It changes year to year. It doesn't balance up throughout the season, and I think we'll look at that and think, well, that's going to play its part. But let's just say, you know, that Newcastle get to January and they're not in the relegation zone. I think that could be a big turning point. I think, you know, that is when, you know, we may see some kind of movement on the takeover. I don't think we're going to see anything before the end of the year. A lot depends on whether there's another buyer out there or whether, you know, Amanda Staveley and her investors and Mike Ashley are talking again and can come to some kind of mutual arrangement, you know. But it, like the last takeover, when Mike Ashley came in, I think we'll all wake up one morning and something will have happened, you know. But it I agree with you. I think we've got to enjoy this season, and that means, you know, not protesting in the ground, not shouting and bawling against the owner inside the ground. You know, we haven't done that for a couple of seasons now because we've had Rafa. I think, you know, whatever happens, we need to look at this and back Rafa and the lads, as we always do, home and away, and make sure that, you know, any negativity is left outside, because it doesn't do the players any good. And it puts the club, if you like, in distress. And I think that any potential buyer will not want to buy into the you know, a club with a distressed fan base. We can be distressed, but we can be distressed in other ways. And I think that, you know, we have to think long and hard, and anyone wanting a campaign needs to look long and hard about how they do it, and not just take a knee-jerk reaction off somebody's response on Twitter. You know, you need to think it out. Any protest needs to be thought out, needs to be discussed, and needs to be done properly. But as I've said, you know, Any groups like that really should be focusing their attention on supporting the team and you know, forgetting about any animosity they've got towards the regime whilst Rafa's still here, you know.
Steve, we've done quite long, so 35 minutes. Listeners have been very lucky to listen to our interviews with Nikos Dabizas and Ryan Taylor. Both tremendous interviews, great lads. I know the lads who interviewed them. Were you at one side? You and Taylor were just blown away how nice they were. How did Newcastle Legends start off? And have you got anyone big coming up in the next couple of months you might want to give a plug to?
I mean, I've been involved in a couple of companies. I mean, essentially, you know, most people know me from being a doorman in Newcastle City Centre, and that's how it started. I networked with you know, Newcastle players. Most doormen in Newcastle are into boxing and MMA. They're not football fans, and I was different. So, you know, I did the door for 18 years, got to know the players. I looked out for the players. I looked after the players as any fan would do. You know, prime examples when I worked at Tiger, and all the Sunderland team came waltzing down as they used to down the barriers on a Monday night, on student night, to get in, and I made them queue. And then there was a 17-year-old Sammy Amiobi. I knew he was underage. Came and I said, lads, can you just wait there? And then I opened the gate and let Sammy Amiobi through, and Shola and Darren Bent, I remember looking at us going, what have you let them in for? I said, I've got to let the footballers in first, lads. But it was just, you know, a bit of respect for the players went a long way, and they always remembered us. And I think essentially the way that it worked was, I wanted to get off the door, so I went into event. I was doing events anyway to raise money for my football team, and I thought, what can I do to make myself some money if I walk away from the door? So I set up an event management company, set up a couple. Newcastle Legends came 3 years ago. It was. You know, off the back of the other companies that I'd set up, and I just felt Newcastle Legends was the right way to go forward, because that's what I do, talk-ins with ex-players. So built up those connections, as I say, on the door, and most of the lads, you know, said, yeah, I'll come and do a talk-in for you. I'm confident on the microphone, so it made sense to go out and compare them myself, and that's what I do. So as for events coming up, you can get onto newcastlelegends.com to see what we've got coming up, but I think the big ones are Sir Les. We've got Les Ferdinand coming back to Nine Bar on the 7th of September, and then on the 21st of September at the Lancastrian Suite, we've got an evening with Gazza and Peter Beardsley, which we tried to do last year, but sadly Paul, you know, was taken ill. I know his dad had been unwell at the time, and you know, he wasn't feeling great himself, so we lost that and we ended up just doing Beardsley. So we're going for it again. Paul's in a great shape at the minute, best I've seen him in 25 years, so again we've got that coming up. But we're constantly on the pubs and club circuit. You know, we're doing one with Peter Beardsley down in Monk's Eaton at the Black Horse the first week in August, and we're always doing pre-match somewhere. We're going to be doing Filthies from this year, start of the season. We're going to be doing Filthies in the big market, doing pre-match down there with ex-players. So, you know, just keep an eye out on NewcastleLegends.com for any information on any of the events.
I know, obviously, I don't want to use up any material that gets used on these events, but have you got any quick stories you can tell us from working with the lads?
Oh, God, I've got a few, I suppose. I mean, I think they've all got their own unique stories. The person I work with the most is always Supermac, Malcolm McDonald, and I think when Michael Martin had approached us to do like a podcast with Supermac, I did say you're probably going to need about six. I mean, I'll go on, but Malcolm's got so many great stories, and you know, there's been so many. I suppose my favourite is Tino, because whenever Tino comes over, it's always to come and do some talk-ins for us, and done some bizarre things like on nights out with Tino, and he's just, you know, because I don't have any clue what he's saying, he could be saying anything on the microphone, and he always insists on having Carlos, his interpreter, there. And you know, Tino tends to be on the phone and I'm asking him a question, and he just goes, nah. And then his interpreter goes, so yes, when the third goal went in, I was delighted. And he could be saying anything, you know. So I think what we should do is probably have a real translator in the audience and telling us exactly what he says, because he's probably slating me on every talking, you know. But it's good, you know, we've done some bizarre things. I think probably the best event I've ever done is the entertainers games, and you know, the first one was more memorable because it's Kevin Keegan's last ever game as a manager, and his last ever substitute in football was me. He put me on for Pavel Cernicek, God bless him, and in front of what, 10,000 people at Kingston Park, Kevin Keegan's last substitution was me, and Alan Shearer shouted some expletives as I went on, and then I went on and gave a penalty away, which I conceded. So it's you know, listen, it's great. I have a lot of fun because, like all your listeners, I'm a big Newcastle fan. I know I'm like Marmite and not everybody likes us, but you know, that's part and parcel of putting your head above the parapet. And you know, I enjoy doing what I'm doing. It's a dream position for me to be in, and you know, working with legends who I get to know. And you know, let's hope that you know, Rafa stays for a long time, and there's longevity in it, and we'll have a few legends to talk about over the next 10 years.
Steve, thanks very much for your time. It's been a pleasure.